prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is April 6th, 2023. It is Thursday. Some reason, Dave, hi, I keep thinking it's Friday. I think because tomorrow is Good Friday, we will be closing early, about 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern time in observance of Good Friday. So if you're looking to get your prices locked in, give us a call before then. But it just makes me think it's Friday then, Dave. Hi.
Well, happy Thursday and happy National Living Donor Day, an important day of celebration or honoring brave people who step up and save lives by donating their living organs and tissue to literally save those in need. So we share the goal to save lives, 17 people per day that might otherwise die while on a transplant list. Anyone can sign up to be a donor. Medical tests can determine which recipient would benefit. So as long as you're between 18 and 60 at most transplant centers, a parent, sibling, or adult child can benefit. Other relatives like an aunt, uncle, or cousin, or even a biologically unrelated person who you know or knows you, such as a friend, coworker, significant other, spouse of a friend, etc., or just plain good Samaritan, living donor, deciding to donate because they're a match to someone who's in need of an organ. Now, Dave Galbensky, a founder of Living Liver Foundation, says if National Living Donor Day only saves a single life, it will be worth it, giving that individual a second chance at life. Mm-hmm. Melody.
Okay, let's go ahead and look at gold. Gold's still holding in there pretty good, though. It should have been done better. Should have done better.
Yeah.
It is Thursday, and I'm thinking it's Friday. So,
my English teacher would have let that slide.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. Gold, 2006, down $14. Silver was holding around $25 all day long. It was a little higher, $25.11, but right now in the New York spot price, aftermarket, we're at $25. Platinum was up 8 at $1,017. Palladium up 32 at $1,541. A little pressure on the dollar, 0.03. 101.89. Crude oil is down 14 cents at 80.47. And the paper markets today, you have the Dow just 2 points to the upside, 33,485. S&P was up 14 points. NASDAQ was up 91, pushed over the 12,000 mark, 12,087. European markets were all positive. Asian markets were all negative. Hang Seng and the Shanghai were higher. 10-year yield, 3.30. And let's take a peek at natural gas, down 6% at 2.023. So everybody's waiting for the big day tomorrow, I believe. Wouldn't you say so, Dave?
Yeah, latest jobs report. Yep. Oh, yeah. Probably the single most telltale sign of what the Fed's going to do at its meeting in early May.
So I think everything has just been kind of on hold. So I can't imagine, after looking at the ADP report, and I'm sure we're going to talk about the claims today since it is Thursday, I can't imagine that report's going to be very good. So I would have to think that it'll be a wild day tomorrow. But anyway, on Tuesday's program, you rehashed a recent blog that depositors have pulled another $126 billion out of U.S. banks in the week ending March 22nd, Dave. Is that correct?
It's true.
I know. That's a lot. Wow. And the largest 25 banks in the U.S. by asset size lost $90 billion. And this is all according to the Fed. So they probably lost a little more. But according to the Fed, it's $90 billion. Total industry deposits fell to 17.3 trillion, down a little over 4% from the same week a year ago. Now, this is the lowest level since July of 2021. So where is that cash going? Well, that's mainly going into the money market mutual funds. And of course, this was all kind of set off with the collapse of the Silicon Valley Bank last month. We saw with that bank collapse, it prompted an outflow of deposits from some smaller regional banks. And some of that cash landed in the money market funds. The shift underscores the pressure that regional lenders, big sources of investment capital in some metro areas, they continue to face. Dave.
Yeah, more than $300 billion, Melody, has poured into these funds over just the last 3 weeks, and another $200 billion, 500 total, since January 1st, driving total assets invested in money market funds to over $5 trillion. Now, the shock of last month's banking panic started pushing cash to money markets for safety, primarily. Also, newly attentive depositors likely to have noticed that average money market yields literally trounce those being offered by banks, savings accounts in particular, 4.5% versus 0.4%. As a result, cash is likely to continue moving that way for a while longer, according to analysts, even if the surge driven by recent bank worries start to calm down. Too big to fail, Goldman Sachs analysts noted yesterday about continued inflows into money market funds, quite likely, but at a slower pace. So we shall see.
Money. It really is a dangerous place to be. I mean, when you go back to 2008, I mean, there was one report that after the day after the Lehman Brothers, there was one that filed for bankruptcy. Well, their money market fund fell like almost, you know, over 90 cents or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a very dangerous place to be. If I remember correctly, during that time frame, when it came to money market accounts, they didn't insure that.
No. No, they didn't. And, you know, there was always, I mean, the prevailing wisdom, even to this day, an assumption that money market, you know, for every dollar invested in a money market fund, you're at least going to get that dollar back. Well, plus interest. But the key point there was, you know, the confidence that the principal will always be there. Well, not so much back in the Great Recession. Same thing could happen this time around. So be very careful, ladies and gentlemen.
And I would also think that if you see these monies, I mean, these monies are going into these money market accounts, to some degree, it might, I don't know if you could consider it like a temporary bail, you know, it keeps things a little more stable.
Certainly.
You know,
Investors with a lot of cash, particularly uninsured cash, more than $250,000, are happy to be able to fall back to these funds.
Yeah. Good luck. Good luck out there. You know, we see the gap between mortgage rates and the treasuries. Their benchmark has widened since the collapse of the collapse of Silicon Valley last month. So folks out there are asking, does this even matter and why does it matter? Well, it's one sign of the investor retreat in the market for mortgage-backed securities. And ultimately, it leads to higher financing costs for American home buyers. Mortgages pin the so-called American dream, and mortgage-backed securities are now a $12 trillion market that touches much of the financial system. As interest rates have risen rapidly over the last year, mortgage investors of all sorts have seen losses in their portfolios. So, and that's because as rates of newer mortgages go up, the value of older, lower rate deals goes down. And this is exactly what happened to SVB, leading to its collapse. And SVP is not the only bank out there that are experiencing this situation, Dave.
No, lots of them are. I mean, if holders of mortgage bonds need to sell them to, say, cover cash outflows or to meet margin calls, the selling activity can literally depress their prices and push up yields even further. New mortgages, in turn, need to be competitive with these secondary market yields to draw investor interest. And thus, the vicious cycle continues. Now, with mortgage spreads going up, much of the decline in the benchmark rate doesn't make its way to consumers taking out new home loans. As an example, the 10-year Treasury declined by about 7/10 of a percentage point over the last month, while the average 30-year mortgage declined by just 0.4 percentage point. And given the continuing uncertainty in the banking sector, and there's a lot of it, and potential lending pullback, spreads are less likely to head back down anytime soon. Another challenge for, well, an important sector of the economy and for investors in general, Melody.
Absolutely. Drum roll, Dave. It's jobless claims Thursday. Well, and this is no surprise that the number of Americans that are seeking unemployment aid was higher over the past few months than the government had initially reported. It reflects a modest rise in layoffs as we've seen the economy slow, especially as we talk about day in and day out of the higher interest rates. The Labor Department reported this morning that the number of applications has exceeded 200,000 since early February, above previous estimates, but still relatively low by historical standards. The department has revised its estimates of the number of weekly applications for jobless benefits under a new formula it's using to reflect seasonal adjustments.
Uh-oh.
So if we don't get the numbers we want, what do? We change the formula. It really is amazing. And, of course, they'll you know, tell you this is going to better reflect, but does it really? Highly unlikely. The new formula is intended to be more accurately captured seasonal patterns and job losses, which means a desired, more educated guess. That's what cracks me up, an educated guess. For last week, the number of Americans applying for jobless aid was 228,000, down from 246,000 the previous week. Using its new seasonal adjustment formula, the government revised up each of those figures by nearly 50,000. Stephen Stanley at Santander Capital Markets said the trend in seasonally adjusted initial claims is noticeably higher than previously estimated, which does suggest that the flurry of layoff announcements so far this year, maybe it is beginning to show up in this data, Dave.
Yeah, but the question is, are the new numbers, or revised numbers, or the numbers based on the new formula more accurate? They're certainly more in line with what the Fed wants to see. First-time applications for unemployment benefits serve as a proxy for the number of job cuts because most people who are laid off do file for unemployment insurance. About 1.82 million people were receiving jobless aid in the week ending March 25th. It was an increase of 6,000 from the week before. With these changes, the job market appears to be finally showing some signs of softening. More than a year after the Fed began its aggressive campaign to cool inflation through all of these interest rate increases, 9 total now since last March. On Tuesday, the Labor Department reported that job openings slipped under 10 million, 9.9 in February. That was the lowest since May of 2021. And Melody alluded yesterday, the ADP reported the nation's private employers added just 145,000 jobs in March. And that was down sharply from 261 in February. Now, ADP figures often diverge from month to month from the government's more comprehensive jobs report, which provides a more detailed review of the labor market, though the two, they say, do tend to converge over time. I don't know what that over time means. I certainly look at last year and, you know, they're fairly far apart. In any event, tomorrow when the Labor Department issues the March jobs report, analysts do expect it to show this 240,000 jobs added last month. Now, not necessarily new jobs. Now, there may be some new jobs among that figure, but remember, as Melody likes to remind us, you know, we're still adding back from the pandemic cuts. So we'll see what happens.
Yes, we will. It's a big day tomorrow. And remember, folks, you know, it's Good Friday, and we'll be closing early. Usually we take the whole day off, but it's been a little hectic, so we got some work to do before we take the day off.
Well, and no program.
No radio.
Survival radio program as well. So if you're interested in any news, hit your favorite sources.
Yes. And well, what
besides
we do,
us.
What we do on holidays, Christmas and Easter, we play music throughout the hour. And it's always very beautiful. It'll be Easter related, Good Friday related music. So make sure you know, if you're tired of the news and you want to have a little peace and a little relaxation and listen to the music. It'll be very, very nice.
Better yet, listen to the pleasant music while you read tomorrow's blog. So you will
no,
get...
No, there's two. Those are two different things. You can't...
Just a little bit of news.
Yeah. Big tech, you know, we've talking about how many they've been laying off and everything. And of course, you know, with their layoffs and so forth, you see their stocks are higher, so they are way up. Are they way up? Have they surpassed their highs, or are they just up off their lows?
Well, they're significantly up off their lows. Some of the figures that come a little bit later in this story will tell or telling.
All righty. But it's telling, the music is telling us we have to go into a break. So we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of client business the rest of today's program. You know where to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Now, just before the break, Melody had started talking about big tech layoffs way up, and so too are their stocks. Amazon, 27,000 layoffs. Facebook parent Meta, 21,000. Google, 12. Microsoft, 10. Salesforce, 9. Dell, almost 7. Cisco, 4,000. IBM, just under 4,000. Twitter, 3,700. Roughly 98,000 total among this group so far. That's a lot of people with a lot of lost income to their families. Salaries at big tech companies average $110,000 a year, and that's no chump change. And that's an average. I'm sure a number of these at middle management positions in particular are much higher in the upper 100s. Now, tech industry layoffs began last year and have just kept up a relentless stream. In some cases, like Meta's, coming in waves. The industry as a whole, which overhired during the pandemic, started trimming their workforce last year, just as the Fed started raising interest rates to cool the inflation-rattled economy. And now, since the end of last year, year-to-date performance of big tech stocks have jumped. Meta up 71%, Tesla up 57%, Apple up 24%, Microsoft 17%. Google parent Alphabet up 15, compared to the S&P index as a whole, S&P 500, up 6.5% as of the other day. Now, tech stocks, as we know, have always been volatile. And it's never a good bet to blame their fluctuations on any single cause. Here are some possible explanations, and more than one might apply. I mean, Wall Street has been rewarding tech for all its layoffs. It's always been that way, not just in the tech industry, but the financial industry and others as well. You know, I guess Wall Street sees a trimmer multinational as a bigger and better and leaner. But the wave of enthusiasm in the industry for ChatGPT and generative AI is also driving the market up. I mean, maybe the market just oversold tech in 2022 and it's correcting course now, but some of these companies are spending some of their cash hoards buying back shares, which can help lift share prices. Or perhaps this resurgence is actually an illusion. Call it a dead cat bounce. It'll fizzle as the pain of higher interest rates continue. Well, however you interpret the numbers, the tech stock rebound has raised spirits in Silicon Valley. I don't mean Silicon Valley Bank. And provided some hope that the industry's toughest sledding may be behind it. I'm not sure about that, but again, we shall see. And speaking of tech layoffs, all U.S. companies announced nearly 90,000 layoffs in March. This is beyond the tech. It's a sharp jump from February and a giant acceleration from a year ago. Outplacement firm Challenger Grain Christmas reported today. Planned layoffs announced totaled just under 90,000, 89,703. It's an increase of 15% over February. Year-to-date job cuts have soared to over 270,000. That's an increase of nearly 400% from the same time a year ago. And of course, again, the damage was especially bad in tech, which has announced over 102,000 cuts so far this year. That's a staggering 38,400% from a year ago, and good for 38% of all staff reductions throughout the nation. So Andrew Challenger, who's VP of the company, said, with rate hikes continuing and companies reining in costs, many of them foreshadowing or planning for a recession, these large-scale layoffs we're seeing will likely continue. Now, financial companies have announced the second highest rate of cuts this year with over 30,600 layoffs. That's up 419% from last year's first quarter. And healthcare and retail are the next highest. At the same time, planned hiring in March waned, to say the least, totaling just over 9,000. That's the worst month in 8 years. On a year-to-date basis, planned additions are at the lowest quarterly total in seven. Now, the main reason cited for job cuts has been, again, the market, economic conditions, fear of a recession. Along with the high level of layoffs, job openings, too, have begun to fall. And although there are still about 1.7 job openings per available worker. The Fed has increased its benchmark borrowing rate by 4.75 percentage points over the last 13 months. And markets are now 50-50 on whether the Fed is done raising rates this year or will hike another 25 basis points at its May meeting. That according to the CME Group's FedWatch tool. Now, time for Levity is Golden, our weekly segment. And today's topic is seasonal faith-based giving. Yes, Ramadan, Passover, Easter all intersect this week, spotlighting the generosity of faith-based communities. Charitable giving is a big part of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, other religions too, with billions given to organizations, communities, and those in need around the world each year. For Christians, Lent, the 40 days before Easter, is a time of penance, prayer, and fasting. It's a time when churches and worshipers place a more intentional focus on giving, particularly in line with their missions, which can include donations as well as acts of kindness. Jews are encouraged to welcome anyone in need to share in their Passover Seder. Many view sharing the holiday meal as part of their tzedakah. It's the obligation for Jews to perform acts of charity and justice. For Muslims, that comes in the form of zakat, or almsgiving, which is one of the five pillars of Islam. Muslims who are able to require to give a portion of their wealth to those in need every year, many fulfill their zakat obligation during Ramadan. David King, who heads the Lake Institute on Faith and Giving at IUPUI, it's a partnership between Indiana and Purdue universities, said it's hard to know exactly why, but we know that religiosity is one of the best predictors of giving and volunteering. More often than not, he added, religious Americans give to religious organizations, but many also give to other groups or causes, and religious giving is often focused on communities most in need. This year, many Muslims are giving to organizations helping those affected by the devastating earthquake in Turkey and Syria. That's according to Halil Demir, executive director of the nonprofit Zagat Foundation of America. The bottom line, King says, in many ways, it's the beliefs and practices that guide us to give, whether it's zakat, whether it's tithing, whether it's tzedakah within the Jewish tradition. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is this week's Levity is Golden. Now, back to not so charitable giving, although they might argue otherwise. In the coming days, finance ministers and other economic policymakers are going to gather in Washington for the annual spring meetings of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank. Since last year's gathering of the globalists, continuing inflation pressures and aggressive interest rate tightening around the world have posed huge challenges, especially for lower-income nations, emerging markets. Further complicating that backdrop are the ongoing war in Ukraine and the still lingering effects of the pandemic and its effect on supply. And now there's another risk, signs of financial instability after the high-profile bank failures in the U.S., as well as the takeover of Credit Suisse. IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva delivered a curtain-raiser speech ahead of the meetings. She said the global economic outlook would improve only after policymakers climbed steep hills, she called it. That is, to tackle inflation, monitor financial stability, reduce disparities between rich and poor nations, and improve overall growth prospects. So far, she added, we've proven to be resilient climbers, but the path ahead, and especially the path back to robust growth, economic growth, is rough and foggy, and the ropes that hold us together may be weaker now than they were just a few years ago. The IMF expects the global economy will grow less than 3% this year, with momentum coming from emerging economies. And also India and China, which technically are still considered emerging economies. China in particular, that I don't get that. But for context, global growth was 3.4% last year and 6.1% in 2021 amid the pandemic snapback. Well, Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester says it's too early to know if the Fed will need to raise its Fed funds rate at its next policy meeting in early May. Her comments came a day after she gave a speech where she said she saw the Fed policy rate moving above 5% and the real Fed funds rate staying in positive territory for some time. Again, the Fed in late March raised rates by another quarter of a percentage point. It's ninth in 13 months now. to between 4.75% and 5%. But Fed Chair Jerome Powell indicated it was near its peak rate after banking sector troubles raised expectations of a further tightening in financial conditions as lending standards become stricter. Mester and her fellow policymakers at the FOMC are trying to bring inflation back down close to the Fed's 2% target without causing a recession. And as I've been saying, I think there's a fat chance of that. Now, at their recent policy meeting at the end of March, most Federal Open Market Committee members signaled they expect to have to raise rates one more time to 5.1%. I guess that's an average rate. And, well, I guess that would, no, 5.1, yeah. And not to cut them until 2024. I'm not sure what that means. If that means, I mean, to 5.1, that's, and it's now 5 at the upper range. Wow, that's, that could be 4 more quarter percentage point increases. In any event, Mester said she still sees persistent inflation than the median forecast of her colleagues, higher persistent inflation. She noted that the Fed does not yet know the duration or magnitude of the recent banking turmoil, of course adding to uncertainty on the economic outlook. However, she noted, too, that bankers were telling policymakers that credit availability remains fine even as they prepare for an economic slowdown. Well, with trillions the Fed has to divvy out, no surprise there. The recent $365 billion growth in the Fed's balance sheet to $8.705 trillion is further evidence. Gold! Another gold bug, we'll call them. Sees gold shooting up, this one to $3,000. Mo Zolfiger writes in the latest Lombardi letter that gold prices could be setting up to do something that has been unimaginable to many. And that is, again, hitting a price of $3,000, and he believes it could happen soon. Here are five factors, he says, could send gold prices skyrocketing in the coming months and quarters. First, the Fed's been trying to fight inflation by raising interest rates. It's succeeded a little as inflation has come down somewhat, but it also remains somewhat persistent. And the Fed increasing interest rates has caused several sectors in the economy to slow down, and we're now seeing cracks, in particularly the financial system. It's starting to look like the Fed might be closer to ending its rate hiking campaign. Some say it may even soon actually start cutting interest rates. Several months away from that, but who knows? You also have to wonder if money printing could be on the table soon, too. And as Zolfiger points out, lower interest rates and money printing would both be good for gold. And there's the global movement where mainly emerging economies are trying to de-dollarize themselves. Recent headlines have suggested that countries like Saudi Arabia are fine with trading their oil for the Chinese yuan. Brazil also recently agreed to trade with China in yuan. Moves like those could definitely further hurt the value of the dollar, which has been hovering now right around 102. For gold bulls, that's good news. That's because gold is one of the best hedges against currency devaluation. Now, third, central banks continue to buy gold at a record pace. They're trying to diversify their reserves. Central banks won't stop doing this either anytime soon, which makes the case for owning gold even stronger. And there's just the overall investment demand for gold remaining robust. Gold rush happening, ladies and gentlemen, but you don't really hear this being discussed much except on programs like Financial Survival. Last but not least, the supply side of the gold market is dismal. As the demand for it surges, Zolfiger says miners might not be able to produce gold fast enough to meet the coming demand. Plus, there haven't been many major new gold discoveries as of late, reinforcing that bleak long-term supply picture of gold. In short, $3,000 an ounce sounds pretty good. Hey, we're going to take it easy for another few minutes as you listen to these important messages. Please come back. You're listening to Financial Survival. Come on, baby.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Bethann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Bethann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. Brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. I'm sitting in solo for Melody, who's taking care of other client business for the rest of the program. Short selling. Concept in financial markets, particularly equities, that I don't care so much for. View it as an unwanted and well, just a bad practice that I think gives rise to more volatility, more uncertainty in the economy. Now, one of those types of manipulation, short selling, the people who do it, known as short sellers, were sitting on more than $7 billion in profit from the mass sell-off of bank shares by the end of March. It's their largest windfall since the global financial crisis, the Great Recession in 2008. It's according to Ortex. Collapse of SVB and the emergency rescue Credit Suisse by its domestic rival UBS headlined a crazy chaotic month, particularly for the global banking sector. Fears of contagion sent shares tumbling around the U.S. and Europe, and The losses were compounded by further monetary policy tightening by the Fed and others. Short selling, as we understand it, is a practice of borrowing an asset and selling it on the hope of buying it back at a lower price, pocketing the difference and profiting from the decline of its value. Manipulation at the heart of it. Hedge funds shorting bank stocks were sitting on a total of $7.25 billion in unrealized gains over the course of the month, according to Ortex. Company co-founder Peter Hilleberg said Ortex data shows that March was the single most profitable month for short sellers in the banking sector since the 2008 financial crash. Those with short bets against the failed SVB, for example, topped the pile with unrealized profits totaling more than $1.3 billion. Fellow California-based bank First Republic netted short sellers almost $848 million as its shares sank 89% over the course of the month before rebounding a little bit. Credit Suisse's capitulation made those with short positions against the bank's Swiss-listed stock about $610 million in unrealized profit last month, with a combined $683.6 million generated from shorts on Swiss and U.S.-listed shares. Now, the banking crisis ripple effect also sees Deutsche Bank, despite the absence of any discernible catalyst, which prompted German Chancellor Olaf Scholz to publicly declare that the lender's a very profitable bank and that there was no reason to be concerned. Deutsche Bank stock yielded an unrealized, we'll call it $40 million for short sellers last month. Ortex said the shares on loan in Deutsche Bank went up by nearly 500% during March, much of this at the end of the month when the price of the stock went up, which caused some of the profits for the short sellers to be lost. Crazy. Just stop it. It shouldn't be allowed. It used to not be. Two of Europe's top political heavyweights held talks today with China's president Xi Jinping at a time when the EU-Sino relationship is at a serious crossroads. After the grand military parade and bilateral and trilateral talks, French President Emmanuel Macron called on Xi to bring back Russia to reason. And he said China could also help bring Moscow, with which Beijing maintains friendly relations, back to the negotiating table more than a year after the Kremlin launched its full-scale, horrendous invasion of Ukraine. Xi said all countries should respect commitments on not using nuclear weapons and to refrain from any action that would lead to further deterioration of the crisis or to it getting out of control. EU, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, who's also in Beijing for talks with Xi, said as a member of the UN Security Council, there's a big responsibility. And we expect China will play its role and promote a just peace, one that respects Ukraine's sovereign and territorial integrity, one of the cornerstones of the UN Charter. Ladies and gentlemen, now, noted author and another gold bull, Kelsey Williams, says in his latest blog this week that if the Fed changes its current tack regarding interest rates so soon after telling Congress and the public that interest rates could rise higher and faster than anticipated, the response to the markets could be catastrophic. He observed that, well, it's happened before. After watching over the years and decades as the Fed changes course rather regularly, he says continually, he notes that investors and policymakers seem to be getting restless. Originally, the Fed promised it would manage things in such a way as to eliminate recessions or considerably reduce their impact. Well, that hasn't happened. If anything, our financial problems are more frequent and more volatile in nature, and the economic dislocation is more severe and longer lasting. Williams believes no matter who's in charge and regardless of how much money is spent to improve the situation, the Fed still has a losing record. He says to expect strategy and course of action to change again. Any new emphasis, though, he believes, will be mostly a recycling of previous strategies that have failed and be highly reactionary. Thus, precious metal investors should remain very, very engaged. Now, as Melody reported in the first segment, the number of job openings declined across almost all industries in February from this time last year. That's according to government data. Yes, employers took a chill pill. The hiring frenzy we saw over the past 2 years is fading a bit. Industries with the biggest pullbacks in job openings are ones that had an easier time staffing up in the ultra-hot labor market, like white-collar business services. Nick Bunker, who at Indeed says these professional sectors take a longer-term outlook when it comes to hiring, which is generally a good thing. A consulting or media firm might see a slowdown in demand ahead, he says, leading it to cut down on open positions. Restaurants, on the other hand, don't operate like that. Bunker says industries tied to the prospect of future growth, they're pulling back the most. Now, here are the industries with the largest year-over-year decline in job openings. Professional business services, 432,000. Education and health, 309,000. Healthcare and social assistance, 298,000. Trade, transportation, and utilities, 276. Accommodations and food services, 268. And leisure and hospitality, 242,000. Yikes. Now, last today. And again, this is, again, don't kill the messenger. It's just news, important news, I think. That regardless of your persuasion, your political persuasion, we ought to be interested in. Even more important than members of, say, the Federal Reserve behaving above reproach are Supreme Court justices who run the highest court in the land and who are appointed to the bench for life. Well, according to a ProPublica report out today, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has fallen woefully short of that ideal. Thomas has allegedly accepted secret luxury trips from Republican mega donor Harlan Crow for more than two decades, an apparent violation of federal financial disclosure laws. Now, citing several documents and dozens of interviews, ProPublica reports that Thomas has vacationed on Crow's yacht, flown on the real estate developer's private jet, and spent a lot of time at the donor's private resort and other exclusive retreats. Thomas, who's served on the nation's highest court since 1991, has not reported these trips on his financial disclosures as required by law, it's according to ProPublica. The investigation offers more fuel for Thomas's critics, who say his refusal to recuse himself from cases touching on issues related to his wife's political work, including her involvement in schemes to change the outcome of the 2020 election, poses a real conflict of interest. Ethics experts and ex-judges interviewed by ProPublica were reportedly incredulous. Virginia Canner, who's chief ethics counsel at the watchdog group CREW, said this: Thomas seems to have completely disregarded his higher ethical obligations. When a justice's lifestyle is being subsidized by the rich and famous, it absolutely corrodes public trust. In a statement to ProPublica, Crow said the hospitality we've extended to the Thomases over the years is no different from the hospitality we have extended to our many other dear friends. Crow said Thomas and his wife Ginny never asked for any of the gifts nor for any of the contributions the Crows have made to projects celebrating the justice's life and legacy. Crowe added that he and his wife have never asked about a pending or lower court case, and Justice Thomas has never discussed one. And we have never sought to influence Justice Thomas on any legal or political issue. Well, I guess we'll just have to take their word for that. Crowe, a Texas real estate magnate, became friends with Thomas after he joined the Supreme Court 32 years ago. He's given more than $10 million in publicly disclosed political donations and an unknown amount to groups that aren't required to reveal their donors under Citizens United and other dubious Supreme Court decisions. Thomas typically spends about a week each summer at Top Ridge, which is Crowe's private resort in the Adirondacks. And flight records show he has used Crowe's plane numerous times. In 2019, shortly after the court shared its final opinion of the term, the Thomases took off on Crowe's private jet for a 9-day vacation in Indonesia aboard the donor's yacht. And that's a trip that reportedly cost more than $500,000. The report also cited records showing that Thomas had been at Top Ridge at the same time as major GOP donors, corporate executives, and a leader of the think tank American Enterprise Institute during a July 2017 trip. A painting hanging inside the Lakeside Resort shows Thomas and Crowe smoking cigars and chatting with conservative figures. They include Leonard Leo, the influential Federalist Society leader credited with helping former President Trump pick his judicial nominations. Turns out that Supreme Court justices are constrained by fewer ethical restrictions than lower rungs on the judiciary. Some groups, in fact, have called to implement a code of ethics for the high court, but justices still are required to file financial disclosure forms. And experts say they're required to disclose all gifts valued at more than $415. And while there are exceptions to that requirement, transportation is not one of them. Kedrick Payne, who's a senior ethics director for the Campaign Legal Center, says if Justice Thomas received free travel on private planes and yachts, failure to report the gifts is a violation of the disclosure law. Beyond that, whether Thomas's actions constitute real or perceived conflicts of interest, here's a case when they tend to be one in the same. Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Dick Durbin called for an enforceable code of conduct for Supreme Court justices as he slammed Thomas over the reported secret trips. In response to the report from ProPublica, he added, "This behavior is simply inconsistent with the ethical standards the American people expect of any public servant, let alone a justice on the Supreme Court." Now, I won't say much more about this, except I think to reinforce that in this case, perceived conflict of interest is just the same as real. Got to clean that act up, Mr. Justice. And Supreme Court, John Roberts, you got to oversee the writing and implementation of some significant code of ethics provisions. Hey, look, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Remember, no show tomorrow on Good Friday. Well, at least no talking. There'll be some lovely music. And we'll be back on Monday. Also be on the lookout for our What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in the morning. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd, the great job he does, and to you for turning into financial survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Make sure you're stocked up with enough of Easter eggs and paint. Have a great holiday weekend. Bye-bye.